a Friday. Yours truly, Bob McCallum, with John Shannon. Shockingly, not so shockingly. He's
why? Why do you say that? You're always picking on me. You know, I get viewer emails saying you're picking on me.
Yeah, what's your point?
I don't know. It's nothing different, but I just wanted to say that.
Well, get used to it.
I've been married 32 years. Are you kidding me? I'm used to it.
Not to me. I can guarantee you that. Joining us, a couple of ink-stained wretches, if you will, as we address where we in the media, if John and I are still in the media, are at in this 2021 and in a pandemic and with a changing landscape that I did not anticipate and cannot even begin to predict where it will go. Steve Simmons of Sun Media joins us, and Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe. Well, I've been doing this about 45 years, and I know you guys have been in this business for an awful long period of time too, and are both gainfully employed, essentially where you've been for some extended period of time. Shannon and I, as you well know, are no longer employed and have now moved to this.
Wait, what?
Yes. We no longer work for one of the media giants who cut us loose and into the wind. And so we have created this thing, which was created by many others, but we have just adopted it. And as I said, Simmons, I don't know where we're going. Do you know where we're going with the media? With media, not just in sports, but in the media in general.
I don't think anybody knows, to be perfectly honest. Especially the people who own the properties, because if they did own, they'd be operating far better than they have been or are under the circumstances. And I'm not saying that in a pandemic. I'm saying that prior to, you know, there being a pandemic. I adore my job, as I suspect you guys all did when you were doing, you know, what it was. Kevin's still doing his. But I completely dislike the business and what it has become and what ownership has become and how everyone is so confused about what is today and what's going to be tomorrow.
We spent a lot of time, Kevin, watching the print media lose its ground and changes at all levels in all markets. The demise of newspapers across North America, in fact, around the world, has been startling. But that has, I'm not saying that that's over and a problem has been solved there, but that battle has been joined by radio and television mm-hmm. as well. What's your sense of where this thing might be going?
Well, from the print aspect, the only guiding light or great promise I see is what has happened at the New York Times and the Washington Post. And I have to admit, I've been wrong every step of the way. So I guess I've made a career of that. I didn't think the pay model would work, and they've proven that wrong. And to a degree, the Boston Globe, my employer, has as well. In fact, we charge the highest premium in the business of about $30 a month, whereas I don't know where the others are at the moment, but typically it's been $15 or $20. So there's a willingness to pay. And because of Jeff Bezos, particularly in Washington, the Washington Post, there's been a real willingness to put the money back in and do great reporting and hire large staff, and it's working. Now the question will be, again, this is just print. Can others follow? Well, you got to find another Jeff Bezos, right? Mm-hmm. How to be a millionaire? First, find somebody to give you $1 million. Yeah. And that's what's happened to the Post. And so the model works if you deliver a very good, well-reported, well-written product. That's promising. But boy, those are either the shining examples or those are the outliers. By and large, print has been wrecked. It gets bought by venture capitalists who draw every ounce of good out of the product. They try to get a 6 or 7% return for their money over the course of a number of years, and then they basically get rid of the carcass that's left behind. So, and you fellows can speak far better to the radio and the TV models that have happened. And I can't say that anyone from my eye and not knowing that business from the brick and mortar standpoint, doesn't look like anybody's really got a firm grip on it.
But Steve, you said, I mean, I think you still like writing, don't you, Steve? I mean,
I adore my work.
Yeah, but let's face it. This week you got smack in the middle of another controversy, which is you're very good at it. Do you think that has changed and the results of what you did have changed because where social media sticks into this? I mean, an instant reaction. In the old days, letters to the editor would take 2 weeks. Now they take 2.2 seconds.
I'll give you an example of what you're talking about. You can be in a press conference now, ask a question. Before the question's answered, you've got an email from someone who's either watching at home or wherever they are, telling you that's a stupid question. So you've been criticized for your question before you've even, got an answer to it.
As long as it's not your boss.
Yeah, I don't like social media much. I mean, here we are in a podcast, but I don't like Twitter. I don't like what it's become. I don't like the hatred. I don't like the mob mentality. I don't like the anonymity of it. And I think it's just too easy for groups to get together, as happened this week with me, and just go crazy over something that had no reason to go crazy over. And so what it has become is this really mean-spirited outlet for people who won't put their names to anything. The worst example you could possibly see is what happened in Washington. The attack on the Capitol. That's, to me, that's completely coming out of social media and out of Twitter.
But some would say, and I love being the devil's advocate with both of you guys because you appreciate it. Some would say that you were mean-spirited in what you wrote about William Nylander.
I would look at it and say I was being honest. I looked at what William Nylander is one of these absolutely highest skilled hockey players you'll find. Like, his skill level is like, to make a Kevin DuPont analogy, is David Pastrnak like, but he doesn't perform like David Pastrnak performs, and he doesn't get anything close to the most out of them. So he'd gone six games without a point, and he plays with John Tavares, who is one even strength goal on the season till last night. And between the two of them, I think that they're at about $18 million a year. And to me, it was just the time to write up. And by the way, the coach is playing them less than they've ever played in their careers, which is not anything to do with me. That's his determination. And so I decided to write about it. Now, I understand this. I write the column. I push send. I don't pick headlines. I don't decide it goes on page one. I don't do the silly front page IKEA thing that they decided to do. That was a Toronto Sun, determination. And they're in the tabloid business, and they got people talking, and that's kind of what they're supposed to do. I'm in the writing business. I did what I did do, and I stand by it absolutely 100%.
None of us really. I'm not going to speak for Kevin. I'll ask him. Do you pay much attention to social media? Do you pay much attention to Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or any place where people can, contact you or at least make you aware of their thoughts?
Well, certainly they can contact me through email, and that's done frequently. But I do pay a great attention to Twitter just because it's such a stream of information. Is it foul? Sure it is. It's and it can drive you nuts. Everything Steve said there, I have to agree with, but it can be a useful tool, which I think is true I can't speak to all of it because I'm not on Facebook or Instagram. I've picked my poison, and it's Twitter. And I've found my way to kind of work with it, if you will.
You have fun with it.
I try to have fun. Humor's yeah. Humor, as you guys know, is very difficult to write anyway. You know, so you have to kind of try to, and I have varying success with this, fine tune it or find the frequency, that humor's allowed, but and frankly, and I share notes with other pals about don't even try because it's humorless. So it can be difficult. I just have to back up on what Steve said, because I confess I missed the whole controversy or kerfuffle, but I will say, without reading it, as Steve has postured it, totally fair game, because frankly, that's what we're supposed to do. And you know, we for right or wrong, we're considered, I hate to use the word experts in our field, but we have a voice in knowing good from bad. And frankly, I've watched a lot of general managers not know good from bad in terms of player evaluation. But if what you do is assess a player's effort, skill, ability, production, that's what we're here for. So all of that's fair game. If it goes another notch to personal, to be it looks, some of the off-ice stuff that people get into, you know, who they're dating, what their sexual preference is, you know, I'm not saying it's off limits, but by and large, I think it is. It doesn't interest me. Right. But how a guy is playing, and of course, I lived this day and night with Joe Thornton in his years in Boston. You know, that's what it is. That's what we do.
Sure. And
if it's a real assessment, if you're just making a BS assessment to get readers, that's another issue. But if what you're laying out there is your honest opinion, as I've often said when I get in the back and forth, that's my opinion. That's it.
One of the things that has amazed me as social media has got more and more prominent, and I'm sure Bob can relate to this maybe better than all of us, is the angrier people get at you and the more they go at you and criticize you, they're also the most dedicated readers. They read everything you write. They come back the next day. And you know, and when Bob, in the days of the radio show, Bob, I suspect, you know, that was a lot of what happened with the show.
Well, I mean, my whole philosophy all along was I don't care if you love me. I don't care if you hate me. What I worry about is if you don't have an opinion, if I can't evoke some emotion from you, then I'm probably not going to keep you as a listener or a viewer in the case of television. And that was always my fear. As long as you're happy, sad, mad, I don't care. As long as there's some emotion there, I think I've got you. The one thing that I've, and I don't have a whole lot of experience with this, but the one thing that I've noticed from time to time is that when you get reaction on social media to something you've said, or in your case, you guys written, there tends to be a herd mentality. In other words, if one person very early on takes a shot at you, there's a cascade of that opinion.
Ready, fire, aim.
Yeah.
Ready, fire, aim.
Well, yeah. Far more will follow that lead than will take a contrary point of view. And I'm interested as to whether you guys have experienced that.
Well, I just did the other day with the Nylander Tavares column. I mean, the response was incredibly, overwhelmingly negative. And now, of course, you get a bunch of emails from people who take a different point of view, but you don't tend to hear very much from people who like what you do. I can write a column. Like, I wrote something about Austin Matthews today through Mike Bossy's eyes and how he's scoring goals. And, you know, I'll get a few emails saying, oh, nice piece, but you won't get sort of the pile on mentality that get when you anger somebody.
But the other part of that, guys, for both of you, and it wasn't that long ago, this is not an old man syndrome comment. There wasn't that long ago that both of you would walk into a dressing room, or if it was in the United States, it would be a locker room. And you could pull the player aside you criticized, or he would pull you aside and say, hey, that wasn't fair. Well, that can't happen right now. And so what you do is you saw it in Philadelphia as Jake Voracek called out a reporter. Steve, you've been called out. Austin Matthews, the same guy that you wrote about today, called you out. The dirty laundry gets out there a lot quicker as well, too. How do you manage that during a pandemic and during social media, the combination of both? Kevin?
Well, you are squeezed, and you're right about, you know, it was more face-to-face, and you guys aired out, and I got chased around a Red Sox clubhouse by a pitcher one day, and Jim Rice had to step in and stop that. But you know what? Again, you don't go looking for that, but at least it's more human, right? This whole Zoom world and the artifice of it all is very frustrating. There's an underlying layer which I think we should talk about here is part of this whole new era too, is that the teams have engendered this whole sycophantic society. You know, they have their own reporters, they have their own website, so the teams are constantly putting out good times, nothing but good times, nothing but good times. So when you actually come to it with a critical eye and fair, frankly, much of the readership now and the consumer has been brainwashed to everything is great. You know, I watch the local broadcast, and some of these guys are my friends. They're all my friends. But they're working for the company store. I turn on the Bruins broadcast, or I turn on the Red Sox. Everything is great. Everything is wonderful. Everyone's going to be the Hart Trophy winner, and it isn't. You know, not these guys have their foibles. They have bad games. Let's hear about that. There's no touchstone for reality anymore. It's all these teams just they're putting it out, and the other side of this, and I'll shut up here because I could usurp the whole thing, but they're using us. So Steve will go into that Leaf room and he'll ask three great questions that used to be the basis of his column. They're going to be the basis of his column. But by the time he gets down back home to sit down, which is that's a stretch these days, he is home. But by the time you sit down or write the thing, they've already parsed it up in video and they're putting it on the website. So they're using our talents to their monetary benefit.
The only thing I would say to that is that there is an expansion of that philosophy of internal media by these teams. For years, we've listened to radio broadcasts that have been filled with homers in all sports, and local television broadcasts are more or less the same thing. These guys, if they're not paid by the team, they are at least approved by the team, and they are well aware of that approval process and therefore govern themselves accordingly. It's one of the things in my business, guys, that has driven me crazy for years and years and years, is the unwillingness, inability of local broadcasters to say even the most minute critical comment about the hometown team. Some guy gets up there and goes 0 for 4, sees 12 pitches and swings and misses at all 12 of them. And the worst he's going to say is, well, he might've had an off night. Well,
usually you'll say that was a good at bat.
Oh, they'll say that first. Yeah.
He's a professional hitter. Yeah.
Historically, that's what's attracted me to print, because I could trust what Kevin was writing in the Boston Globe or what Bob Ryan was writing or Lee Montville or whoever it happened to be at any given time. I knew they were going to tell me the goods and give me the goods. What I really miss talking about, no dressing room access, no ability to talk to people, the whole Zoom thing that's going on now, is that you would build relationships walking into dressing rooms.
Mm-hmm. Sure you would.
With coaches, with players, with trainers, with whomever. You would build, and they would come to know you and trust you. And some of the best relationships, frankly, I ever made were people I had confrontations with to start with, And then we talked it out and got to know each other, and so it carried on. But now today, you can't get that, obviously. It doesn't exist. I find the Zoom interviews close to useless. And so the ability now to have conversations with anyone, mm-hmm. if you're not doing it on the phone or by text, you know, that's gone right now. And I'm going to mourn that right now until it's back.
By the way, Steve, I don't think they're going away. I think this was said to me during the bubble last summer was, boy, the players really like this. Boy, the players are much happier not having dressing room access for the media. And maybe we're going to end up having more Zoom, and maybe that's an adaptation. Now, I also want to put one caveat on what Kevin talked about with, you know, team writers. I was at the NHL, 15 years ago when we saw the demise of newspapers, and we were dying for, we had, you know, a ton of writers not go to playoff series. So, you know, the teams and the leagues started to fill a void when the newspaper industry started to fall apart. And so this is where, and now people realize that not only are you a pro sports league, you're a content company. And that's why we are where we are now. I'm not justifying it, but that's a reality of what's happened now, because the leagues can put out content. Otherwise, that content would not get out there anymore.
I want to discuss all this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Steve Simmons, Kevin Paul DuPont with us on the podcast today. Back in a bit. The future of Zoom. This is something that Zoom has been around for a while, but the pandemic has taken Zoom into a completely different level from the standpoint of meetings. I have meetings every day. There's rarely a day now that I don't have two or three Zoom meetings. We are doing this program over Zoom. Steve and Kevin both talked earlier about post-game news conferences, whether they're with coaches or players, they are conducted now over Zoom. I see very little chance of going back to the good old days, mm-hmm. the days where, you know, game is over, you'd go downstairs, you'd go into the clubhouse or the locker room, and you'd wait around for a bit and talk to somebody. I'm not sure these teams are even going to allow this. And I'm pretty sure they don't want to go back to the way it was. And certainly the players don't. Kevin, you're scratching your chin. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, I do agree. I have to add that this has been a train going down the track now, even well before the pandemic, which is, so if I take you back to the old world when I started going into rooms in the mid-70s, when whether it was Red Sox or Bruins or whatever room, the room would open up and we would all go in there. I'd sometimes go in the good old days, I'd watch a Bruins practice right from ice level. And sometimes I'd walk back into the room and grab a coffee in the room and talk to an injured player or two.
Sure.
And I'd go back out, and then the coach would come in, players would come in. So, and it was also more relaxed even in baseball with the dugout and going back to the room and going back to the field. Well, for the better part of the last 10 years here in Boston, this is specific to hockey now, the room is closed. You would never walk into the room during practice. They open up the room and there's no one in there. They have a member of the PR staff bring a player out and they'll say, Patrice Bergeron at his locker. And everybody goes to Patrice Bergeron's locker. Everybody hears the same quotes. Patrice leaves. They bring out, you know, David Pastrnak's at his locker. At most, there's two at the same time. So it's all being managed. And going back to John's point about the newspapers left, that's true. And obviously, they became content providers, but they began to monetize that.
Sure.
So now it's not only that we've lost if you will, lost control of it, but they have a monetary interest now in mainstream media not getting the content. Hmm. Feel the same way, Steve?
The public's lost something in this, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, tons.
Because they're getting controlled information. What they're not getting, and we've certainly all experienced it over the years, is you get to know somebody and you get to sit down with them and they tell you a story that you couldn't believe. And you sit there and you take the notes or play your tape recorder or whatever. And you're sitting there and you're just blown away by what you're hearing. I'm going to tell a story. I was out at the pool in St. Louis. Flames were playing St. Louis in the playoffs. And St. Louis had a defenseman named Charlie Bourgeois. And we're out at the pool talking. And all of a sudden, he's telling me that his father was buried alive as an RCMP officer in New Brunswick when he was, I think, 10 or 11 years old. And telling me the story of all this and all of it for the record. And I'm sitting there just blown away by this. And it's probably one of the better stories I've ever written in my life. But you don't get that now. You can't get that story because you don't get that access because you can't build the relationship. Right. And so that gets lost to the reader. There's so much superficial coverage now. And that disappoints me greatly, not just as someone writing, but as more than that, as someone reading.
Well, we've all covered baseball. And I mean, you know, why did you get there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? You got there because that's when the players were wandering out to take BP or infield or throw play catch or whatever. They didn't have their uniforms on. They probably, well, maybe their pants, but some kind of t-shirt. And they'd be kind of looking for something to do. And we were looking for people to talk to. And you could take that guy and stand over to the side and literally have a 20-minute conversation with him one-on-one with nobody else there. And it was not in the atmosphere of confrontation necessarily. Mm-hmm. It was just conversation that would inevitably produce something worthwhile for you guys to write, for me to talk about. Those days are gone. Maybe they come back. Maybe when baseball opens up again, maybe when there are fans in the stands, maybe we'll be able to go on the field. Maybe you, Kevin, will be able to go down to the cage at Fenway at 4:30 in the afternoon, but maybe not. Or maybe you'll be there, but those guys won't want to talk to you anymore because now all of a sudden they've accepted this isolation of a Zoom call and the control that they have now.
Hey, listen, I think to Kevin's point, I think one of the things that hasn't been discussed about this, and I don't want to lament that it's not like the old days, arenas have changed. Kevin, I remember standing on the ramp at the Garden in Boston waiting for a car to show up with a player in it because he had to walk the gauntlet towards the Bruin Room and you guys could have a chance to talk to him. Well, my first job in this business was at Maple Leaf Gardens. We would stand at the Wood Street door waiting for Rocky Saganuck to show up to have a quick word with Rocky Saganuck. Now the guys go into parkades under the arena. They go in their private elevator to their dressing room and they're done. They don't see any of us. They don't even, and the sad part is, it's not about the media as much. They don't see the fans anymore and the fans don't see them. And the interaction, the personal interaction between people and players truly has on so many levels disappeared.
If I'm walking down the street, back in the days when we would be walking down a street, and I bump into Doug Gilmore or Matt Sundin or Curtis Joseph or somebody who used to be a Leaf, we're going to stop and talk. I don't know if we're going to have a long conversation, maybe, you know, depending on who it is.
Some more than others, Steve.
if I'm walking down the street today, this is Mitch Marner's fifth year as a Leaf. He's an upper echelon NHL player. I'm not sure he'd know who I am. I'm not sure. I definitely know he wouldn't stop to talk. It's just how things have evolved over time. And, you know, that's, you know, some of the things that made some people in our business so great.
Yeah.
is, you know, that they could build relationships, get to know the people they're writing about, get to understand the general managers and the coach. I mean, the amount of time we spent in managers' offices or coaches' offices over the years in close contact was unbelievable. Now it's all, you know, arm's length. I can't call, there's general managers I know in the NHL that I call their cell phone. They say, well, I can't talk on the record without permission of the PR staff. It's in my contract. Like, that's unbelievable to me.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin, I mean, and the funny thing is that all those guys that you used to cover, I mean, particularly in a city like Boston, where a lot of guys have hung around, they're still friends. They're all friends now. All those players.
Yes. Yeah. And there's also with a certain number of players when their careers are over, you know, I've never been chummy with players, but when their careers are over, a friendship does develop.
Sure, sure.
Over, frankly, usually over mutual need, right? The alumni team wants some publicity, or, you know, and all of a sudden I'm a great guy, But Bob's depiction of BP, I think, is essential here, because what we all did was, in like any consumer business, it works best on trust and trust building. Mm-hmm. And that's what those interactions did. Now, that's not to say you were able to reach every player. There's always jerks on their side and there's jerks on our side. There's no question about that. But by and large, everyone's pretty much in the middle. And over time, if you're there day after day at 3 p.m, and you're spending 4 hours on the field or in the room at the batting cage, they begin to know who you are. They begin to know you're serious. You build trust over those little things. You know, this happened in my family. I don't want this in the paper, but so you understand, I'm going through a hard time. You know, over days and months and years, that gets built in. You become trusted. It becomes a mutual respect and trust in the playing field, which now you can't get to, Steve. There's no getting there. Those, you know, you don't get there in a Zoom session. You don't get there when they say,
no chance.
Patrice Bergeron is at his locker for 3 minutes. Can't happen.
Baseball's different, though, than the other sports. In baseball, you have to put in FaceTime. You have to be around. The players, I found this as a columnist and not as a beat guy. If you're not around all the time, they don't know you and they don't trust you. It's like, you have to be there. You got to put in your FaceTime. They got to figure out, which is why I always went to spring training, because I found that was the best way to sort of put in your FaceTime, get to know the players, have conversations. Then when you came in July, they'd know who you were. Now, if you don't have any FaceTime at all, and in the Zoom interview, you get one question, maybe a follow-up, depending on who's running the thing, and it's over in 3 minutes, and there are 11 questions asked, not one that relates to the other one. And so what do you actually have at the end of that session? Very little that you can use, or very little of any value.
So how do you do your jobs, guys? Steve, how do you do your job?
I don't want to make this sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but I've had an ability to get angles, just to find something to write about that other people don't. And I think it's been a strength of my career, whatever, you know, I'll use yesterday as an example, you know, Austin Matthews tearing up the NHL. You know, I got Mike Bossy on the phone talking about goal scoring and what he's seen in Matthews. You know, so you work things differently. You can't do what you used to do. You can't rely on, I can't go to a morning skate and think, I'm going to find a column here. There is no morning skate. It doesn't exist anymore. So many of the avenues you're left, as I am, you know, I've been home since March, like we all have. I've covered the World Series and the Super Bowl and the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA Finals, and I haven't left my kitchen. And so you're getting used to it, and it's putting a lot more onus on you to be able to write. But I think, you know, finding angles, being smart about it, being ambitious and industrious, I think still is the way to get it done. It's just way harder right now than it's ever been before.
Yeah, all of that. What does help, Steve, is that when you've been at it for 20, 30, 40 years, you've got more of a storehouse to reach for.
Sure.
You know, whether it's phoning someone up or just using your own mind to develop these. The other thing is, because there is such herd mentality, it doesn't take much to break away from the herd mentality to come up with a slightly different angle that can be an entertaining write and right. Ideally an entertaining read as well. So that helps, but I am eager, as I'm sure Steve is, I'm sure all of us are, to get back out there and actually deal with people face to face, because that's where you get the gold.
Well, the hardest thing, and I presume Kevin's probably in the same boat, because he's written, you know, really successful notes columns over the years. And I've been writing the Sunday Notes, you know, for now 33, I think, years it is. And it used to be a lot easier to write when you were in rinks, when you're picking up tidbits here and there, when you're mm-hmm. talking to people, when you see a GM in the hallway, whatever it happens to be. And then by the end of the week, you got a whole pile of stuff to choose from. Now, at the end of the week, you haven't talked to very many people and you haven't been anywhere. And you still have those 2,000 words to fill. And what might have been a note on Tuesday, 5 years or 10 years ago, is now already discussed and debated on the internet. And so it's much harder to come up. So there's way more onus on you as the writer and the opinion maker to come up with things than there were when you were providing more information and less opinion.
Yeah, no, in conclusion, the Zoom news call, whatever it is, does it end when this pandemic ends? Do we go back to where we were? Or is there going to be a reluctance on the part of the teams and the players to revert to the system that we once believed was the only system?
I expect we're going to use the health and safety rationale to stay out of the rooms as much. I really do. I think for the near future and maybe even the long future is that we're going to say no, that we can't go in the room because of public health issues, and that's why we're going to be stuck on Zoom, stuck on whatever technology is for years to come, and that's not necessarily the right reason. It will be the reason given.
I think there's certainly initially that's going to be the case, because I think there's going to be quite understandably, we're dealing with a society that's very gun shy, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because of the pandemic. So initially, I think that'll be the case. You know, how if this pandemic stays away, then I think we'll go back to some more of where we were, but I don't think we're ever going back to exactly where we were. I think off days will be handled by Zoom, maybe, or maybe it'll only be the morning skate that we get access. Post game, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
They will fine tune this to their benefit, and in the end, I'll be caustic enough to say, or cynical enough to say, it'll depend on where the better money is for the team. You know, how they better monetize the situation, because that is driving much of this right now.
What's going to be fascinating to me is to watch how the upcoming Summer Olympics will be covered in Japan, assuming that there is an upcoming Summer Olympics, and how next winter's Winter Olympics in China will be covered, because historically the Olympics are the greatest storytelling adventure that we ever get to work. Like, there's nothing that compares to it. But if you eliminate access and you take away, you know, what we have had for forever, then, you know, I think what's going to happen is that the television networks who pay for the rights will have a phenomenal array of stories. And those of us who are just there doing our jobs, although frankly, I'm not going anymore, will have great difficulty or greater difficulty to come up with the kind of stories that we've been able to do in the past.
And yet, to both of your points, there is no greater controlled environment than the Olympics.
But not for stories necessarily. Like, I'll give you an example. 2010 Vancouver. Ron Wilson's the coach of the Leafs and the coach of Team USA. And I approached the PR guy and asked, can I go to the Athletes Village and meet with Ron Wilson, which is where he was living. Mm-hmm. And he went to Ron Wilson and Ron Wilson said, sure. And so photographer and I went out to the Athletes Village and spent an hour with Ron Wilson, who we had a beautiful picture of him out looking over the mountains in Vancouver and, you know, a piece of art kind of photograph, and spent an hour with him talking about being completely anonymous in the Athletes Village, where no one knew who he was and no one cared and no one recognized him, how nice it was to not be the coach of the Leafs for those 2 weeks. And, you know, he, for a guy who didn't always open up and wasn't always, you know, warm and fuzzy, he just opened up and he was fantastic. And I got a, you know, at that time, 2-page tabloid story that, you know, no one else had. And it was, you know, I'm very happy to have that piece. Can we get that anymore? I don't think so. I don't think that will exist for guys who do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite stories from the Olympics was, before Lillehammer, I was with the U.S. hockey team at Normandy. They did a day trip. They were training in France. They did a day trip to Normandy. So I was literally on the bus, right? I was on the bus and at the graveyards, at the beaches, you know, just, again, access, detail, time. You know, the key elements of good reporting. Willing contributors in the athletes. To today, where, and I call this the ESPN effect, the athletes of today have grown up watching ESPN, and they're enamored by the 4-second quote, you know, great 4 seconds from LeBron. They think that's journalism. Yeah, that is ESPN journalism packaged in 4-second bites. I need to sit down and hear your story. So back in the 70s, I would say to Terry O'Reilly after practice, Terry, can I get you outside for 5 minutes? Sure. An hour later, we'd leave, right?
Yep.
You'd have that access. You'd have detail. You'd have real fabric to write. And now you sit down. After 2 minutes, the athlete's looking at you like, what's wrong with this guy? You know, I gave him my 2 or 3 good 4-second quotes. We're moving on. So their brain has been totally changed from the athletes that we dealt with.
You know the name Vicky Sonohara?
Sure.
Vicky Sonohara played for Team Canada in the Olympics a number of times. And in Japan, it was the first year women's hockey is in the Olympics. And her family, of course, is of Japanese descent. And after the hockey tournament was over, the small village where her family was from had a Vicky Sonohara day, and they had a parade and they had like all these things. And Steve Buffery went out with her. Steve Buffery from The Sun went out with her and wrote just a fabulous piece on, you know, these people didn't even know what hockey was. And here they were celebrating, you know, one of their own, you know, being in the Olympics in their country. And I remember Christy Blatchford reading the piece with tears running down her eyes. And that's how good it was. You know, again, those are the stories I mourn for.
Yeah.
Because those are the ones, as Kevin being, you know, being on the bus or whatever it happens to be, we're not getting there now.
It will be an interesting journey in the future to see where we wind up. Does the media revolt indeed if the teams insist on Zoom calls and the absence of face-to-face conversations, and what might those revolts look like, and what might the outcome of those revolts be? Too many questions and not enough answers, unfortunately, but this was a fascinating time. I thank both of you for taking a few minutes for us, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to sit down and chat again.
Maybe in person. Maybe in person one day.
That would be nice.
In real life. IRL. Yeah.
Thank you,
Kevin. It was a pleasure,
Kevin.
Guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks. Enjoy it.
That's the podcast. Have a nice weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.